Welcome to the U.S. Law Essentials Law and Language Podcast, the legal English podcast for non-native English speakers that helps you improve your English listening, improve your legal English vocabulary, and build your knowledge of American legal culture.
Welcome to U.S. Law Essentials Law and Language Podcast. I'm your host, Stephen Horowitz. Today's episode is part of our series of interviews with multilingual lawyers. Today's guest is Scott Alperin, a trademark lawyer in Washington, D.C. He's a graduate of Colby College, Go Mules, which I believe is the mascot. Is that right, Scott?
That's right.
And a graduate of Washington Law School?
Washington College of Law at American University.
Okay. Scott is also a graduate of the Washington College of Law at American University. And so welcome, Scott.
Well, it's great to be here. It's an honor.
So I said that, you know what? Before we get to the interview, I always start off each episode with a dad joke. Are you also a dad?
I am also a dad of three kids.
And do you ever tell dad jokes?
I've been known to tell a few dad jokes. Yes.
Okay, so let's see. Tell me. Don't tell me the answer because we'll save that for the end. But if you know this joke, let me know. Okay. Here's the joke. Which days of the week are the strongest days?
You know it? I don't know it.
Okay. Well, we'll come back to that at the end. Okay. And now on to the interview. So Scott, have you ever lived in another country?
Yes, I have. I've lived in Japan, I guess for a total of 4 years in all.
When was your first time in Japan?
Well, in 1990, I was an exchange student at a school called Shoin Joshi Daigaku, Shoin Women's College.
And yet, you're not a woman yourself, right?
No, I am not. No, but their exchange program was a co-ed, and so. Students from my college and some other colleges were able to go to school there for a semester, and it was really wonderful.
Yeah, what part of Japan was it?
That was in Kobe, Japan, and that was there. You may know there was a big earthquake in Kobe in 1995, I think, but I was there before that. In 1990.
And then I know you lived in Japan for 3 years because you and I were in the same town together on the JET program. Is that correct?
Yeah, that is totally correct. And it was one of the best parts of being there was getting to know you.
Yeah, and I guess I would have to say the same.
You'd have to.
Now, so if I ask you the question, do you speak any other languages?
Then I would say I speak Japanese haltingly, or I could say I speak broken Japanese.
Do you speak any other languages in addition to Japanese?
Well, I took 3 years of French in high school, but I would not consider myself a French speaker. That's for sure.
And do you use your Japanese in your work at all?
Yeah, many of our clients at my firm are from Japanese law firms, or I guess you could say the clients are the Japanese law firms, and those law firms have clients themselves. And so I work on behalf of the Japanese law firm's clients, if that makes sense.
You know what? I didn't say the name of your law firm. Is it the Alperin Law Firm?
Alperin Law Offices.
Alperin Law Offices. So in talking about your work, Scott, how do you explain what you do to, say, your parents or your children?
Well, I guess you could say that I'll point to a Coke bottle or some product, and I'll point at the R in the circle, which is the federal trademark registration in the United States, an R in a circle. And I'll say, that's what I do. I know a lot about that R in the circle and how companies can get the right to use that R in the circle next to their trademarks.
And then, and what do your children say to that?
They say, oh, well, what does the R in the circle stand for? And then I say, well, children, it stands for registered. And it means that a company has a registered trademark. To obtain that a trademark registration, a company or a person has to file a trademark application. And foreign companies and foreign applicants need a U.S. attorney to represent them before the United States Patent and Trademark Office, the USPTO.
And I think, if I remember correctly, your dad used to be a judge?
That's right. He's retired now, but he used to be a judge.
And so he's more familiar with the law. So how do you explain your work to your dad?
Well, to my dad, I'll say, Dad, can you help me with this trademark case? And he'll say, objection.
how do you describe your law practice to your dad or your mom when they ask what are you doing?
I would say that I help small companies or individuals to get the right to feel confident that they have the right to use a trademark. And a lot of smaller companies or individuals are concerned that if they invest a lot in a trademark, they will, a few years later, they'll be contacted, usually by in a cease and desist letter, by a bigger company that will...
A cease and desist letter?
A cease and desist letter, yeah.
And that, which does what?
Well, so the big company will often tell a smaller company or an individual to stop using their mark. In other words, to cease and desist. It's sort of repetitive to say, because to cease means to stop, and to desist also means to stop. But it's basically,
in the law, there's a lot of phrases like that where there's the same word twice with two different meanings. And my understanding is that a lot of those come from using an English based word and a Latin based word. Did you know that?
No, I didn't know that. That's very interesting.
Go ahead.
Is cease or desist the Latin based?
I would think desist is definitely Latin based. Cease, I think, might not be, but it also sounds a little bit Latin based. So I'm not sure.
Oh. Right.
So it might be one of those examples, but it might not be. But in England, they used to use French and English in the legal system, and so they would use one of each, and that's why we have these. Apparently, that's why we have a lot of these redundant phrases like cease and desist. Both mean stop and stop.
Yeah. So sometimes I send cease and desist letters, but mostly because my law firm is so small, mostly we receive cease and desist letters. So for example, we received one from Nike. As you may know that Nike has a famous slogan, just do it. Uh-huh. Well, my client used a trademark called just say it. Uh-huh. Nike wasn't too happy about that.
And what was the, can I ask what the business area or the field of business was?
It was self-improvement and, you know, motivation services to help people improve their lives.
Does it matter in trademark law if you're in a completely different line of business?
It does matter, but Nike said that their mark was so famous that it didn't matter. Do you want to know who won the case?
I do.
Nike.
Yeah?
Yeah. But
what argument? They made the argument that their mark is so famous that nobody else is allowed to use anything similar.
That's what they said.
And just blank it. Nobody else can use that.
Yes. Beware. If you use just blank it, it's likely you will get a blanket cease and desist letter.
Got it. Excellent, excellent wordplay there.
Sorry.
You are good with the dad jokes then.
Why I became a dad, just so I would have the right to use dad jokes.
Uh-huh. And what's a typical day of work like for you?
Well, so Alpern Law Offices has three attorneys, including myself, and two to three staff members at a particular time. So I will wake up in the morning and come to my computer and see what work has come in, and then I will distribute it to my attorneys, or I'll take it myself, or I'll ask one of the staff members to do one of their jobs related to something that's come in to my inbox. So my work really focuses on my inbox and my computer. Ever since the pandemic, we don't even have a brick and mortar office to go to.
And when you say the work comes in overnight, is that because does a lot of it come from clients in other countries?
That's right. Almost all of the emails coming in and the work coming in are coming from Japan or from Europe. So both Japan and Europe are ahead of us. And so emails will come in and be waiting for me when I wake up in the morning.
Uh-huh. And what are those emails? What's the kind of thing that those emails are saying? Are they saying we have a problem, or are they asking questions?
Often they are saying, we filed a trademark application with the USPTO directly through the International Trademark Filing System. And our application was refused. So we need a US attorney to handle responding to the office action. I'm sorry, when I say office action, that's like a refusal letter. And so a lot of what I do is help Japanese law firms or European law firms respond to refusal letters, which are called office actions. Or they might say, we have a new trademark, or our client has a new trademark, and we would like you to help us file that trademark application with the USPTO.
Ah, okay. So there's a lot of companies or clients out there who, when they have a business or they want to create a new trademark, they might be fine in their own country, but they recognize as their business grows that they need to also think about the US market and trademark there, but they don't necessarily know anybody. They don't have a lawyer or resources in the US. And so that's when they find you, I guess.
That's right. And a lot of my clients, because they're law firms, they have many cases that they're sending to the US. So often I have a history with them.
Ah, okay. So they're not coming directly from the companies. They're coming through the law firms, and the law firms are familiar with you and with your work.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. And the other day I got an email from a Swedish law firm saying that their client, a clothing company, received a cease and desist letter. And they wanted my advice on how to respond to it.
Okay, Scott. So, and what are some of the ways that you evaluate trademarks?
Well, that is a very good question. Trademarks can be considered weak or strong based on their relationship to the goods and services of the trademark owner. So, for example, Are you familiar with the trademark American Airlines?
The double A, sort of overlapping.
No, ways. The word American Airlines.
Oh, yeah, sure.
Well, so when that trademark was first created, it was a very weak trademark. And the reason why is because it just described what the services were. The services are the airline services of an American company. And the trademark was American Airlines. So actually, if they filed a trademark application for American Airlines, it would probably be refused as being too weak and descriptive. However, over time, a trademark can, acquire distinctiveness. So a trademark that is very distinctive is very strong right from the beginning. So have you heard of the trademark Kodak? You've heard of Kodak?
Sure.
Yeah. Kodak doesn't mean anything. It's not related to the services or the goods. So that was an inherently registrable trademark from the very beginning. But American Airlines, they had to earn their strong trademark rights. And the way they did that was they spent millions of dollars on advertising and they used their mark for a long time. And at some point, their trademark became distinctive. The weakest trademarks are generic. The second weakest are descriptive. The third weakest, or getting into being stronger, are suggestive marks. Like, for example, you know, are you familiar with Dawn dish soap? Dawn,
yeah,
is suggestive. I was just thinking of this yesterday. Dawn, it gives you the sense that it's going to be, that your dishes are going to be bright and light, right? Dawn.
Like dawn is the early morning time.
Dawn is the early morning time. But Dawn doesn't describe dishwashing soap. So it's suggestive, but it's not descriptive. So you could register that right away. And then the strongest trademarks are arbitrary. We say arbitrary and fanciful.
So for example?
Kodak.
Uh-huh. Google?
Yeah. Google is arbitrary because I think Google is a real word. It's one, one followed by 100 zeros.
Something, yeah.
Yeah. So it's a real word, but it's used arbitrarily to describe, to as a trademark for that company. So it's very strong. It would be very strong.
Oh, or names like when the Philip Morris, the tobacco company, decided to rebrand itself, it called itself Altria.
Yes.
Right. AT&T or no, Bell New York, the phone company now calls itself Verizon, which is a made up word. Right? These are.
And apparently SunTrust Bank is turning to Truist.
Oh, yes. Yes, I've heard that one. Now, what about a name like Toyota, which is has no meaning in America other than with the car? But in Japan, Toyota is a common last name, and it literally means, what, bountiful field, if you translate the Chinese characters?
I believe it does. Yeah, in that case, the examiner at the USPTO would invoke the doctrine of foreign equivalence.
Ah, so if it has meaning in Japan, we're going to presume it has meaning. We're going to imbue it with meaning in the U.S.
That is exactly right. And I should mention that that surnames are considered descriptive for the first 5 years of use. So after 5 years, you can register a surname, but...
And by surname, you mean a family name.
A family name, yeah.
In the US, we call it a last name, but a family name.
That's
like
right.
Alprin or Horowitz, okay.
That's right, that's right. So...
So the Alprin Law Offices, can you trademark the Alprin Law Offices?
Well, we could, because I've been in business for over 5 years. Yes.
So how did you end up doing trademark law? Did you, I would think as a child, you probably didn't think I'm going to grow up and be a trademark lawyer, although maybe your children will grow up thinking they want to be trademark lawyers. But how did you end up working in trademark law?
Well, in my case, I always was sort of thinking I would go into law in general, because my dad was a lawyer and then a judge. However, I didn't know what kind of law I wanted to practice. But then I went to Japan in 1990 on an exchange program. And then from 1992 to 1995 in IT Prefecture with you, Steve. And I really came to love Japanese culture and learning the Japanese language. And so when I went back to America and started going to law school, I didn't have my eye on trademark law at all. But then one day in the lounge at the law school, I saw a sign in Japanese on a bulletin board that said, basically help wanted, looking for a paralegal, but it was in Japanese but I could read it. And so I called them up and I said, hey, I'm available. And I talked to a partner at the firm and he said, oh, I'm sorry, we don't really have a position for you right now. And I said, I'll work for free. And he said, okay, well, why don't you come on down and we'll have an interview.
Huh. So you made your own opportunities.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, sometimes I think you do have to be, especially when you're a student, to work for free just to get experience. And the rest is history.
And you also, you didn't take no for an answer, it sounds like.
No. And I remember in the interview, when I went down to the law firm, we were talking about intellectual property. And I asked them, so what is the difference between a patent and a trademark? And now I think I know.
Hopefully you do. What would you do if you were going to hire a lawyer and they asked you that question?
Well, I would empathize with them, and I think I would answer. But, if I was hiring them for their experience in trademark law, then I would have to not hire them. But if I knew they were just starting out at an entry-level position, then yes, I would explain it, and I would be glad that they asked.
Okay. Sort of a final question. Do you have any advice that you like to give young lawyers or people in general, perhaps, or anybody sort of starting their own law firm or their own business?
Well, I just think that my advice is that having a law license is a really great thing for your career. In my situation, I was working at law firms for about 5 years before I started my own firm. But as can happen in anyone's profession, you can get, things don't always work out with the company that you're at, that you're working at. And I feel that a law license gave me the ability to, after I had gotten a little experience working in law firms, to start my own firm if I needed to. And I did need to in 2005. And I never expected to have a law firm that continued for 16 years, where we are now, but somehow it's happened. So.
Okay. Well, Scott, thank you so much for being here. It's been really wonderful to have you as a guest and to hear all of your experiences. Before we go, let's go back to the dad joke of the episode. Do you remember the question?
What days are the strongest days?
Yeah, what days of the week are the strongest days? Which is interesting because we were talking about strong and weak trademarks. So this was unplanned, but it just sort of worked out like this. So the answer is, which of the days of the week are the strongest days? Saturday and Sunday, because Monday through Friday are the weak days. W-E-A-K rather than W-E-E-K. So just a simple play on words.
That is Saturday. A good one. And I will definitely share that with my family tonight at the dinner table.
Okay. Well, you'll have to let me know how that goes over.
Will do.
Okay. Thanks a lot, Scott.
Thank you.